Welcome back. My name is Seth Juarez. You are watching Channel 9 Live. We're here in Darmstadt, Germany for the Microsoft Technical Summit 2016. Use the hashtag, people. If you have any questions, make sure you use the hashtag, or you can ask questions below in the question box, because I have none other than the .NET doctor in Germany. How are you doing, my friend?
Thanks. I'm fine, sir.
So tell us who you are and what you do. Why do people call you the .NET doctor?
I'm a software developer.
Of course.
Yeah. What else? I'm developing with .NET. Mm-hmm. And the nickname was given to me by a friend, actually, who was astonished and amazed that I knew all those details about when Microsoft introduced which class in the .NET framework and all the code names in the past. And one day he said, "You are the .NET doctor, because I've got a PhD in computer science." And he made those two things together to one word.
Well, that's weird, because I'm actually the .NET goofball, believe it or not. And so I don't know how that stuck, because I didn't study goofballiness, unfortunately. So tell me a little bit about how you're an MVP. How did you get to be an MVP? And tell me a little bit about the program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, actually, it started all with school, because when I left school, I had to decide between three things I would like to do.
Okay.
I wanted to be a software developer.
Of course.
I wanted to be a teacher, and I wanted to be a journalist.
Okay.
And I had to decide what to study now. I decided to study computer science.
Okay.
But nowadays, I have those three jobs. So I'm working for one company as a software architect.
Cool.
I'm working as a trainer and consultant. I'm also working for different IT journals. And I'm writing computer books for some publishers.
Yeah, he says written computer books, like 70 books. I mean, I haven't read 70 books, I don't think, in my lifetime. So you have written 70 books, is that right?
Yeah, really, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But it's 13 years ago now, Microsoft had a little change in the MVP program. In
right.
the past, they only awarded people who were really very active in user groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also rewarded people who were writing books and giving talks on conferences. And that was the time when I came in.
I see.
Because I've written so many books and articles that they gave me the award.
So how long have you been an MVP?
13 years.
13 years, yeah. Okay. So tell me about, and this is cool because we've got a guy that's been an MVP for 13 years, which in tech years is like 90 tech years.
Yeah.
Tell us about sort of the transformation that you've seen Microsoft go through from your perspective, being here in Germany and being the .NET doctor. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, the first transformation I saw was the transformation from the component object model to .NET, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, and it was all closed source. We had this shared source common language infrastructure. Can you remember that one?
I don't remember because I am not the .NET doctor.
Okay.
I'm the .NET goofball.
So there was a possibility to see the source code in the past, but we really couldn't use it or be an active part in the development.
Right.
And it was the time when some people at Microsoft said not so good things about Linux.
Uh-huh.
You might remember
I remember that, actually.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I was at a conference 13 years ago, probably not to the day, but in the summer, where I asked someone at Microsoft, tell me what are we doing to help the Mono project? And he said nothing. And now Miguel de Icaza is a distinguished engineer now at Microsoft,
yeah,
which is
yeah.
kind of cool.
Yeah.
So tell us more about that.
Yeah, I know him. I was talking to him in 2004 in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. on a conference, and we had to chat about what he's doing.
It was PDC, wasn't it?
Yes, PDC, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a chat about his project, and I was a little bit afraid at that time that Microsoft would someday go with their lawyers, mm-hmm. to him and say, "You are not going to continue that."
We did go to the lawyers, and we did tell them to continue that, but with us. So that's the cool story.
Yeah, that's what happened later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and then the Microsoft got more and more open, and I think it was 2014 when the ASP.NET MVC was open sourced,
mm-hmm.
and then we had Entity Framework open sourced, and I think it was 2012 that was the first open source project.
And I remember it was Scott Guthrie Scott Hunter and Scott Hanselman were all wearing red shirts.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
There's an interesting backstory. I'll tell you about it later.
And then 2014 was the really big bang with the whole .NET framework open source. And when Satya Nadella went on stage and said he loves Linux, really amazing development we saw there. And now, we see so many Microsoft products on other operating systems, and we are really can't think of anything that's not going to happen in the future.
And what's cool is that Microsoft now is a platinum member in the Linux Foundation.
Yes, I know.
Which is kind of cool, I think.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 10 years ago we would have thought that would have never happened, but it actually did. It was big news.
And on the other hand, now Google is part of the .NET Foundation.
Which is another fun thing.
Yeah.
Because I had Chris Sells on at Visual Studio Connect talking about John Skeet, who writes all the cool C-sharp books, is actually on the board that gets to talk, a steering committee, which talks about the future. Okay, so we've talked a lot about sort of the history of things. Now let's dive into a particular project that you're really interested in. Tell us about EF Core.
Yes, EF Core is one of my favorite products at the moment. Entity Framework was also a favorite product in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I was always very much a fan of OR mappers. Yeah, but this course, I don't like to write SQL. Link is much cooler than writing SQL statements. So now we have the big transition now from Entity Framework to Entity Framework Core.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can switch to my machine.
Absolutely. So we'll go to these slides right here, okay?
The important thing to know about Entity Framework and Entity Framework Core is that Entity Framework Core is not the next version of Entity Framework, but a new product.
Yeah.
So we started with some features in EF1, and then we had additional features in EF4 and 5 and 6. And now we see that Entity Framework Core has not the same feature set. There are some additional features, but some features are missing.
Right.
Yeah. And that's really important to know, that you cannot just take your existing Entity Framework code and run it on the new Entity Framework. We have more features in EF Core 1.1, and we will see even more features in the future.
Right.
But it is important to know there are some features, like the Entity Data Model, or the Base Class Object Context, or the Entity SQL, that will not be transitioned to the new product.
And now, is this, in your opinion, is this a good move, a bad move, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a good move, because Microsoft is really taking out some of the stuff that made Entity Framework slow.
I see.
Not absolutely slow, but let's say slower.
Right.
Slower than necessary, call it like that. And I also have performance data we can look at.
Sure.
To see how they compare.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, then we jump to another slide. Let me.
And this is good stuff to know, because I know the Entity Framework person that I know, Julie Lerman, I asked her, okay, if I'm going from EF6 to EF Core, she's like, okay, you need to erase what you thought. Not necessarily erase, it's still a lot of the same things, but it's not a quick jump over.
Mm-hmm.
But the good thing is that Entity Framework 6, they're still working on that, right?
Yes.
So that if there's a bug, if you're using Entity Framework 6, you shouldn't have to worry about what's coming in the future, right?
They're not only fixing bugs, they will add features as well.
Oh, okay.
So they are just on the way of developing the version 6.2 with some new features.
Okay.
Not a lot, but some.
Okay.
So what we see here on my slide is some performance measurement I made. Looks like a lot of data. So I did it with 10,000 records.
Okay.
I'm reading 10,000 records from the database. It's a SQL Server database with a data reader without any mapping
it's
at all.
It's just like literally just sucking it out and spitting and printing it.
No printing. No UI. Just a loop over the reader, and that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because if you involve UI, then the UI is the slowest part.
Got it. No, absolutely.
So it's 26 milliseconds. You can get 10,000 records out of SQL Server in 26 milliseconds.
Which is really fast.
Really, really fast. Yeah. So if you do that with custom mapping, like handmade mapping, And I really code every copy of the column to a property.
Got it.
Then it's about the double of the time.
Yeah. So you're just printing, you're just doing console.WriteLine on the data reader, DR printout. If you're mapping the data reader to your own objects using conversion, then you're going to add a little bit of a penalty.
Yeah. No console write line. I'm not
not
printing.
Even that. Just
yeah,
looping.
Because console write line is slow.
So you're going all the way down to the metal. I love it. This is good.
Yeah. Now let's look at Entity Framework 6. Yeah? This is what Entity Framework 6 did. It's 277 milliseconds when you use the tracking mode, or in the no tracking mode is 73 milliseconds.
And tracking mode is when there's a change, it keeps like state of what the changes have been.
Yes.
Okay.
If you use the no tracking mode, you have no change tracking, and if you call save changes, there will be nothing to change to the database, even if you change the objects.
Sure, sure.
So now look at the Entity Framework Core 1.1, and you see that in the tracking mode, it's less than the half.
Wow.
Yeah. And even the no tracking mode is faster than the no tracking mode was in the past.
That's pretty amazing.
And the no tracking mode is as fast as handmade mapping.
Okay, so when you say EF Core 1.1, you mean EF Core 1.1 working on top of the full .NET 4.6
yes.
framework.
Yeah.
Because you can use Entity Framework Core on the full framework or on .NET Core.
Yes.
Okay, and that's an important distinction, right?
Yeah, you're right. Okay. I didn't mention that yet, but I also have additional numbers here on the top. Mm-hmm. So these numbers here are the Entity Framework Core on top of the .NET full framework, and then the numbers here on the top, this is the Entity Framework Core on .NET Core, and you can see it's even faster. It's even faster than the handmade mapping.
Which is, and this is amazing to me because you're looking at EF Core 1.1 on .NET Core with no tracking is faster than looping through a data reader and mapping it to an object.
Yes.
So how did you, and did you run these tests yourself?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I did not only run them once, but I usually do is I run them 100 or 1,000 times, and I leave out the first run because that's not
a
valid.
There's a penalty, right?
Yes, the penalty in the first run is not valid for these measurements.
And so these are real numbers from the .NET doctor about EF Core 1.1. Was there a significant, I don't see EF Core 1.0, but was there a significant improvement between 1.0 and 1.1 as well?
Not that much.
Okay. So if you're looking at doing this, You could literally write a data reader that maps to your objects, and that would still be slower than using EF 1.1 on .NET Core with no tracking.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this to be honest, this number here is on the full framework.
Okay.
Yeah?
Full framework. Okay.
Yeah. So I haven't compared it to the data reader on .NET Core yet. But
okay. So the .NET Core data reader might be a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But we are talking about like 1, 2, or 5 milliseconds. So,
but the reality of the matter is that, like, if you're moving over, you're probably going to be using the full framework anyways. You're still going to be better off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool.
But we should also talk about the new features.
Let's
in EF Core.
Yeah, of course.
So the one thing I like most is that you can run Entity Framework Core now on all platforms because it runs on .NET Core and it runs on Xamarin.
Interesting.
Yeah. The Xamarin thing still has some problems.
Okay.
Yeah, but that will be fixed soon.
Sure.
So that means you can use Entity Framework in a Windows Universal app now. You can use it in an Apple device app. You can use it in an Android app. And I've done that. I've brought one of those apps for you. Yeah. You might have heard that Microsoft bought Wunderlist, a German company.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so they paid about 100 million euros for that. So I made a task list
just
myself.
Just in case we want to buy another one.
I called that the miracle list.
Okay, yeah. I love it. Awesome. This is all working on top of EF Core, on top of SQLite, it looks like.
Yeah, that's SQLite in even this universal app. It's not that much sophisticated UI. I can click on items if I have done them here, and I can add new items like prepare my session about EF Core that I will do later on. Yeah. And of course, these items are saved, they are stored in the SQL Lite database, and if I start it again, then they are there again. And yeah, that's very, very easy to accomplish.
So the first thing I always do when I look at these kind of apps is I want to look at relationally, what do these look like? Looks like you have a task, and in the task, you have a set of things to do, right?
Yep.
Did I get it right?
Okay, yep. Okay. We can see that here. We have an entity framework context, which has a task set and task details.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. And I say I want to use SQLite. That's the name of my database file on the device. Here are the entity classes. That's it, yeah? 35 lines of code for the context.
So my question to you is, did you have to write this EF context, or was it generated, or what's going on here?
Okay, I had to write that.
Okay.
You cannot yet do reverse engineering of an existing database with SQLite. You can do that with SQL Server and other databases, but not yet with the SQLite.
So how did you know, for example, that... Okay, let's pretend I haven't used, because I used Entity Framework like a long time ago for some demo app I made, because I only make demoware kits. How did you know, like, okay, I need to build these classes? Is there like a set, like, okay, if you want to use Entity Framework and you don't have a database, you want to do code first, these are the things you need to write. How do you know what those are?
You need the context.
Okay.
And the entity classes or the domain objects,
or
whatever you want to call them. And there's nothing special about them. You don't need a base class. You don't need an interface. You just write normal, plain old CLR classes, and you use the data types you want.
Got it.
Yeah. Then you connect them using an IEnumerable type.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the context. And then in the actual application, you use the context.
Okay.
Yeah. You said you want to read data. In this case here, I'm removing items, yeah. But on here, I'm adding items. You see, I add the new task. I add some details. I haven't finished the UI actually yet. It's
That's
saying
okay.
to
it
do
great.
One, two, three.
Could you move the find and replace pin so we can see the whole line?
Sorry.
You see what I'm saying? Like right here. Can you take this pin off? So that we can move this window over. Do you see the?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
So then we can have a little bit tons. Okay, there
yeah.
you go. And so now what you're doing is you're creating this new context, you're creating a new task, you're adding it to the task set, and then you're adding some subtasks. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have change tracking enabled? Is that by default?
Yeah, the change tracking is still enabled by default.
Okay.
But what I really like in Entity Framework Core is that you can set the context into a node tracking mode. So that you can say now node tracking is the default for this context.
And so you're just doing like a read-only thing, you don't want to have any tracking?
Node tracking does not mean that it's necessarily read-only. You
okay.
can always attach any object to the context later.
Mm-hmm.
But because I like this because it's much faster loading. We saw that in the performance
sure.
data. And a lot of people make the mistake, like they get data from the database in the tracking mode, like 10,000 or 20,000 records, and they only want to change one, two, or three records. Why spend all the time in attaching all those objects to the context when it's not necessary? So in Entity Framework Core, yeah, now you can set, I generally load all the data in the node tracking mode, and then I attach those few objects I really want to change to the change tracker. When you think of when you think of a data grid, you can load the whole data grid in the node tracking mode, and then when the user clicks into one row, you can call the attach method to attach the object for that row to the context.
So what does that look like in code? Is that, I mean, because right now you're loading it with change tracking, right?
You say change tracker and query tracking behavior. Favorite tracking behavior,
node tracking.
Tracking. Yeah.
Okay.
That means now the default is everything is loaded in the node tracking mode.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to add something to the change tracker, then you have to call the attach method.
And so where's the attach method? Is that on the DB?
Yep. There's the attach method.
Oh, and you're just attaching an object.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's much smarter. I don't know why, like, I like the idea of always doing no tracking, Because you, I mean, you pretty much are going to, as a developer, you're going to know the objects that you need to change.
Yes.
Yeah. Every time.
Yeah. And that's a mistake a lot of people do. And I had to write an application with a really lot of data. I'm using Entity Framework for a table with 8.5 billion records.
Wow.
And if I load like 100, 200 or more thousand records in the tracking mode,
it's
that takes an awful long time, like many seconds. And if you do that in the node tracking mode, you are around a second or below.
The other question I have about Entity Framework, and this is dealing with aggregation, for example. If I want to do an aggregation, is there a way to do aggregation using Entity Framework and then project onto an object without having to materialize the entire set? you see what I'm asking?
This is actually an issue I prepared.
Oh, look at that.
We haven't talked about that before.
We really haven't. This is a good... I didn't make this up. This is literally like what I want to know. And he has like, oh, look what I have. That's why he's the .NET doctor. Right? Oh. Okay, show us.
Yeah. So here we have a group by. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that some of the...
No, I know all about fluke sets. Man.
Yeah,
I have some at home. And some Freya Platzes. I have like six in my car right now. And Obflugorts.
Yeah.
You know, we all need those.
Yeah, it's actually about flights and free seats.
Of course.
I'm sorry, the names are in the German language.
No,
I haven't translated
don't be sorry.
Them.
We're in Germany. You're supposed to speak German in this area. I'm sorry, I'm intruding with my loud English.
Okay. So we have this group by here, and when we run the application, we actually get out the number of how many flights from the different destinations we have. You see, I have added an American city as well.
Thank you. Very nice of you.
Yeah.
No, two. There's Seattle.
New York.
Oh,
New York. Yeah.
And then Seattle at the bottom, right?
Okay.
So,
but the problem is it runs as we expected it. So the result is as we expected it. Mm-hmm. But if we have a look at that SQL that was sent to the database here, then we see that, unfortunately, Entity Framework Core...
It pulled all the records.
Yes.
And that's, I don't like that.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
Yeah, that's the problem. You now could try to do the following. You could sort of make your own SQL.
Right, which we don't want to do. This
okay, but we're looking for a workaround.
Got
this
it.
This is temporarily like that. It's
okay.
Not. It won't be like that forever, but in the current release, the group by will be executed in the memory.
Okay.
They call it the client evaluation.
Okay.
So, and there's no switch to say, I don't want it. The only switch you can switch on is say, I want an exception if it happens.
Okay.
So that I don't run into this without knowing it.
Yeah, it's like the select n plus one problem you can run into.
So we could try to work around by writing our custom SQL statement. And map that to a custom object.
Okay.
But unfortunately, this is not supported yet also.
Okay.
So, but what you can do is you can have Entity Framework Core and the full classic Entity Framework in the same application. And I'm started a project with Entity Framework Core on the full framework. So what I do when I need a group by, then I use in the same application, in the same project, Entity Framework 6. And I map Entity Framework 6 to the same objects. That's possible.
I see. Okay. That feels like kind of a lot of work to do. Are they eventually going to plan on making this sort of something that happens, like server-side run? Is this something that's
going to happen? Yes, that will happen.
Okay.
It's definitely on the roadmap, but we haven't had any... exact dates for when this will be realized. There are different situations where this client evaluation happens.
I see. And so if I'm using Entity Framework Core, what is the workaround for this right now if I'm going to do this?
I haven't actually found one that's really within Entity Framework Core yet.
Mm-hmm.
So my workaround is using Entity Framework 6 for this.
I see.
Or use a data reader. But as far as I know, I haven't found anybody who could tell me something else. It's, at the moment, not possible.
I know people. I'm going to go ask some people.
Yeah,
because this is This is a pretty common scenario, right? Mm.
But I'm quite sure that Rowan Miller is aware of that.
Yeah, I know Rowan. because about a year ago, we talked about like moving to EF Core, and we did a whole series on any framework core. And so, yeah, I mean, this just seems like something that should be supported, and hopefully it does. I'm not going to speak for him, because Rowan, you're the man. I just want you to know that. Okay, so what else do you have to show us?
But interesting about Entity Framework, of course, is that you now can use local databases on mobile devices, but you must know that you cannot call SQL Server from a mobile device.
Right, because there's no direct connection.
Yeah. So we don't have the SQL Server TDS protocol implemented on the mobile devices. Mm-hmm. So if you want to use them, those databases, you still need a web service, as you can see in this picture.
But for local storage, to persist on the device, you can use SQLite, for example.
Yeah.
What other kinds of databases will work locally on a mobile device with EF Core?
None of us are supported yet.
Okay.
But Microsoft is working, of course, on other databases, and they will in the future also support NoSQL databases, not only relational databases.
I see.
We had in the beta phase of the product, there was an implementation for Azure Table Storage.
Yes, I saw that.
But it's not finished yet.
I think they were just trying to see if they could get it to work.
Mm.
So for someone that doesn't know anything about Entity Framework, what would be your advice to them? Like, why would they want to use it? And what are some things they should look at to get started?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So why would they want to use it? And what are some things they can do to get started if it's just a scenario they want to support?
Okay. So Entity Framework Core is definitely a good idea if you want to write a mobile application, as you saw in my demo.
Uh-huh.
It's a good idea if you write an application with ASP.NET Core, because this fits very good together.
Sure.
And you are really platform independent. And it's a very good idea if you want to get a lot of data out of the database very fast.
Yeah, of course, that's what we saw,
yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. But you must know that there are a lot of restrictions. I only could mention some of them.
Mm-hmm.
There are more that you should know, and you really should check if all those restrictions that exist at the moment are okay for you.
Okay.
And then decide if you want to do it in Entity Framework Core. But as I mentioned before, you can also do this hybrid thing, Entity Framework Core and Entity Framework 6.
And that's only if you're working on the full framework, though.
Yeah, but only on the full framework. If you're working on the full framework, they can coexist in the same application.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you could sort of start with Entity Framework 6, start with Entity Framework Core in your application, do everything you can do within the core, and for some situations you're using the full Entity Framework.
Okay, so we are almost out of time. Where can someone go? Is there a website to learn more about you and more about Entity Framework Core?
Yes, there's of course the documentation for Entity Framework Core. Or shall I open that?
No, I want people to learn more about you. So where can they go to find out
stuff? About me?
Yeah, because you probably write some of this stuff down,
yeah.
I'm guessing.
Yeah. So my webpage where you can find me is itvisions.de.
Mm-hmm.
Hope I'm online.
That's okay. So go to itvisions.de. We are almost out of time. Thanks so much. This was pretty awesome. It's good to have a man of your caliber on. Coming up next, you're going to get orchestrated, consistent, and deterministic deployment. What does it mean and how to get there? Thanks so much for being with us, .NET Doctor. And we'll see you around the flip side. Take care.
Yeah.